Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect to your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
This is continuing coverage in the trial of Alex Murdaugh from True Crime Today.
Welcome to day number 14 of continuing coverage in the trial of Alex Murdaugh. My name is Tony Bruschi. Thanks for joining us. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you download podcasts. You don't miss any breaking updates or discussions on this case and our continued coverage of it. It is the 13th of February, 2023. Let's go to the courtroom for segment number one.
We have some matters with the jury, with two jurors who have tested positive for COVID. And they will not be able to continue. They've confirmed the positive tests by sending them to the clerk of court who has forwarded a copies to me. And I've spoken with each of those jurors, and they are, one is symptomatic and one had a cough and sore throat, and they've both been relieved. So we have two alternates that'll become part of the regular panel. So we'll need to do that this morning. Any comment?
Your Honor, and I've heard great consternation, having just gotten over COVID myself over the Christmas holidays and did a little studying on it, my understanding is that if you've been exposed to somebody with COVID, it can be up to 5 days before you exhibit symptoms. My only concern is that we don't create a train wreck with this jury that's testing negative now, and in an abundance of caution, should we not, and I hate to use the word delay, but that's what it would be, till some health professional will tell us that if they were exposed last Friday when they were together, they would show symptoms or test positive by Tuesday or Wednesday. I mean, I'm not trying to, trust me, it's an economic disaster for us to continue.
We've had a doctor who came and tested them this morning and who recommend that they be tested again on Wednesday.
So,
she is a doctor who fully understands the CDC guidelines and other precautions, and so your concern is being addressed by the court.
Are you
going to
keep together between now and Wednesday?
Yes, and we've recommended that they have agreed to wear masks, as everyone in here probably should, other than the essential people who have to talk all the time. But my focus primarily is with the jurors. Of course, our camera person, I noticed they tend to wear masks, and most others do not. And some clerk personnel. Yes, sir.
Your Honor, my only other concern is, well, I understand the clerk of court is out with COVID.
Yes.
And one of her...
And her staff. Her staff, they've been tested, and they're all negative.
I don't know what to say. I mean, I want to make sure that this, as you do, that this jury does not infect each other, and then we're in a position none of us want to be in.
Or infect me or you. We all have that same concern, and the jurors are aware of that, and they have a positive attitude about it, and according to the doctor who administered the test to them this morning.
The last question would be, do you have masks? That I didn't bring a mask.
I have one right here, and I have my clerk has one right there, and we have a few others in the back. You're welcome to have one of them if you would like to have it. The clerk staff, she's going somewhere. Are you heading towards masks or something?
Are we good?
Yeah.
Okay, we're good, Your Honor.
Thank you. All right, Mr. Waters.
Yeah, I was going to echo the same concern that, you know, if we have the two who are released and then we have it kind of spread through those that are remaining, if, you know, and again, this is not what I want to do at all, if some sort of delay to see what happens, because in talking with the defense as we first heard about these issues, I think we were both in agreement that we would rather, if forced to delay a little bit rather than end up with a mistrial and be unable to continue at all. And that would just be my only point that I would raise at this time. And, you know, we could have two. If we go ahead and release them, then we could have some others become symptomatic, and we just have to, you know, wait a few days for it to run its course. But that would be my only thought and recommendation. But obviously you've had a doctor come in here and discuss a course of action.
And, Your Honor, we would concur that, and again, trust me, I'm not interested in delaying this at all. But what I don't want is to run the risk that we have a mistrial because they all get COVID or they all get symptomatic. It just seems to me if by Wednesday they'd know, it might be prudent to adjourn for a couple of days. And I'm not questioning your decision. I'm just concerned that we not, and if they have masks on, that's great, but when they go back in the jury room to drink the water or have lunch or whatever they're going to do, they'll have those masks off. It's not 100%. I caught COVID the first week of second week of December. It took me 3 weeks to get over it, and I don't want to lose this jury.
We don't want to either. And again, if we were going to do that, I would say then we with the two that have tested positive, we would, you know, at least keep them in the bullpen, I guess, until we figure that out or see what happens over the next couple of days.
The two with COVID, they have been released from jury service, and here's the mask carrier is right behind you there. Fortunately, we selected wisely selected six alternates, and we'll be down to five or four. Four following three following the release of these two. And of course, we have no way of knowing. We just have to take precautions, as we all do, as we navigate through life during this period of time. And we need 12 to deliberate, so that's the goal. That's why you have alternates. Of course, anytime you have a trial that's protracted, that goes on and on and on and on, then you're in the natural risk of attrition, and which we are experiencing now, be it COVID or some other problem. The longer we stay here, the longer something will happen to various folks involved.
Ron, all I'd say about the how long is it going on, I'm reminded of a quote from Jerry Spence, the famous trial lawyer in the Silkwood case. In that case, which went not much longer than we are, he said, "We began this trial in the winter. We finished it in spring. I thought we would grow old together." So I'm beginning to feel much like Mr. Spence. But hopefully we can finish the state's case this week and we can begin our case.
Yes. With regard to selection of the next two jurors to become part of the 12, the clerk has placed the juror numbers of the remaining jurors in a box. And statute requires that they be selected. I think the word is by lot. Any objection to a clerk, member of the clerk staff, selecting the next two?
No objection, Your Honor.
All right, if you will pull number one, Madam Clerk. All right. And you can tell us what juror number it is.
Juror number 441.
Number 441 becomes a member of the regular panel. And the next one. Number 326.
No, juror numbers of those who are excused.
Yes, of course.
The jurors who have now been excused, juror 220. Is that correct, Madam Clerk?
Yes, sir.
220 and 528. Yes, sir.
Mr. Waters and I are responding as this develops, and I'm not trying to, it's a joint concern. We have a huge gallery out here. Are we exposing ourselves to more risk by having them there?
Yeah, probably so.
Having brought that to your attention,
would you like me to issue a mask mandate for everyone in the courtroom? Other than witnesses who are testifying and people who have to speak openly in court, like the judge and lawyers?
Yeah, I think it was that.
Well, and aside from a mask mandate, we might, you know, have a little bit of social distancing, a little less numbers might be warranted. I mean, none of us want to limit anything, but we're in a different paradigm, and both of us have a concern about getting this thing to the end without it, COVID causing it to fall apart. And that's the paramount concern for both the state and the defense. And the court, I know.
And, Your Honor, half our alternates are gone now. Half our alternates are gone. We're 3 weeks in, three jurors down.
Little thermometer thing at the door.
We'll leave all that with the clerk staff. They are able to monitor that, I believe. I'm not going to order any social distancing. It mean we cannot order any social distancing with the jurors. Of course, when COVID came in initially, we reversed the courtroom and had the jurors seated in the audience, and that was our means of keeping them socially distanced. I think we can require masks because people who are in the audience are here for the most part of their own volition, and they can watch it all on TV if they do not wish to wear masks. But I'm not going to order any social distancing. And for the moment, we're going to encourage everyone here to mask up for your own protection as well as the protection of these proceedings and of each other. And then we'll explore how far we need to go with that as the day progresses. Otherwise, is there anything else before the jury comes?
Your Honor, one other matter, and I just to let you know some developments over the weekend. Back in March of 2022, there had been search warrants prior to that issued to GM, in particular, for OnStar data. And in March of 2022, GM sent a letter to law enforcement, to SLED, in which they advised, aside from some basic sort of ownership information and that sort of thing, that they had no data. Late Friday after court, Friday evening, I got a call from John Conrad, who, of course, as Your Honor is aware, has been handling a lot of that digital evidence, who had received a communication from GM stating that probably because the trial was going on and maybe in response somebody was watching the testimony of Fafosky, that they had gone back and looked again, and this time they found a lot of data that includes GPS location data from the Suburban that was that the defendant had on June 7th, 2021. That information came in Saturday evening, and I had a chance, of course, to look at it Sunday morning. I immediately called Mr. Griffin, and we talked, and we provided that information to them. And so that information's come in. Of course, when we became aware of it, the GM actually sent a letter with it saying, yeah, we told you back in March we didn't have anything, and we just found it, and here you go. And so we've actually had that data and provided it to the defense. Obviously, we'll let the defense speak for themselves, but we've done everything to facilitate their review of it. If anything, I think it confirms a lot about the timeline that we're both working within. So I don't know that they have any objection about that. We're just trying to absorb it on the fly, and it's a substantial amount of information. But I wanted to raise that to the court's attention and of those developments, and of course, let the defense speak for themselves.
Your Honor, again, it is a massive amount of data, which we forwarded to our experts last night. They're beginning to look through it. Some of it is very helpful to us. We don't see it in any way contradicting the state's previous timeline. But the data can show you car speed, can show you GPS exactly where they were. It can show, just many, many, many things that we did not have before. And again, this is not about who didn't do what when GM concedes they didn't give it. The problem is there's not a problem. They're going to bring somebody from GM to authenticate it, as I understand it, and then give it to their expert who they were going to use for a timeline anyway and have him or her digest it. We will not be able to cross-examine their expert until our experts have a chance to digest it on a granular level. So I'm just giving the court a heads up. We got it to them yesterday. We suspect it's going to take them 2 or 3 days to do that. And so I know we're talking about having this, the rest of the case by Wednesday, and we're going to try to get ready by Wednesday. But I can't guarantee. I mean, again, we just got it yesterday. So I just, the only hang up that once they authenticate it, before we cross-examine their expert, we need an opportunity to have our experts advise us what, if anything, we need to ask them. I mean, that's just, you know, how it works.
And Your Honor, just to be clear about this particular data, there's two sets of data. The most important data to what we're doing, and again, it's confirmed by the timeline, it's just actually confirmatory of the timeline that we've been presenting to this jury. But we have specific location data, data points that are being logged every 30 seconds or so or something like that, as well as vehicle speed. That's the crucial data that's in this from the relevant time period. There's another file that has some various sensor data that's logged, but in our initial review, I don't think there's going to be anything in that information that's going to be helpful to either side. We actually was talking with defense counsel earlier, and they were able to load already, because I was going to suggest they do this, load that location data into Google Earth, and it works pretty well. So I think it's something that's going to be able to be digested fairly quickly, and in, at least in our review, it does not appear that there's any information in there that's different than the timelines that we were already working from. It's just much more specific and confirmatory of what had already been established.
Your Honor, with all due respect to Mr. Waters, his opinion on what's important to us is not. We find things in that other data he talks about that's not relevant or not of interest to them. That is of interest to us. An expert's going to, you can't load it into Google Earth. You have to do some things with it to get it in a position. I mean, Mr. Barber, who's our computer whiz kid, was able to do the Google stuff yesterday and indicates the other materials, the car function, are the doors locked, are they unlocked, is it in gear, is it not in gear, and the information about other functions of the vehicle. It's just amazing what they capture. I mean, it's scary because they know everything about how you're operating your vehicle, and speed, where you are, all those sorts of things. We're getting that, and our experts are downloading it. We think there's some relevance to those other databases, but I can't represent to you here today that it is or it isn't, but we have seen a couple of things. We think they're going to be very helpful to our case. So all I'd say, all I'm attempting to do, and let me make this clear, there's nothing, we're not implying in any way the state did anything untoward here. I want that perfectly clear. Now, GM, after all the money we gave them to bail them out, couldn't get this done. That may be another matter altogether. And somebody must have been watching the trial, because between the time the FBI agent testified and they got the data, it was less than 2 days, as I understand it. So somebody hit a button and generated that data in less than 40 hours or 48 hours. So it wasn't hard to access. The state had nothing to do with this delay. I just wanted to raise with the court before they call their timeline expert. We may need some period of time to get our experts to get it digested and then get back with us.
At its core, it's an unexpected witness coming into the trial. I know there have been some cross-examination on that issue in general. So the state has now disclosed an additional witness, and certainly in fairness to the defense, you should have an opportunity to adequately prepare to confront that witness if need be. And I'm sure that witness is down the line, the next witness the state is calling, since the state indicated that you expect it to be through on Wednesday. And that did not include this witness. So you must have other witnesses and you should be ready to proceed with, and we'll deal with the other issue as it might come up.
And Your Honor, we'll keep you posted. We're going to, we're in court from 9:30 to get back till 6 or 6:30 to be able to talk to experts. So we're going to have to talk to them tonight. But again, we're somewhat constrained as to how much discussions we can have and at what time.
Understood.
Thank you.
And Your Honor, again, we're having to digest it as well. But it's going to be incorporated in our timeline witness who, yes, is not expected to be called late tomorrow or Wednesday.
Anything else before the jury comes?
Nothing from the state, Your Honor.
Nothing from the defense, Your Honor.
Bring the jury.
right, very good. Good morning.
Good morning.
Okay, day number 16. Ladies and gentlemen, you might notice that a few of your jurors are missing. Those jurors have been excused. I see many of you are masked up, but we hopefully do everything we can to keep everyone safe, including members of the court. I'm not going to order any wearing of masks by jurors, but encourage it. But we have excused two jurors and now have two other jurors who will move up to be among the first 12 jurors. And that means we have 3 alternates remaining. So juror number 441. Who is 441? All right. Number 441, you're a member of the first 12. And juror number 326. 326, you're a member of the first 12. Of course, it doesn't matter where you sit. You just need to know that. And with that, we're ready to move forward. State's case, next witness.
Thank you.
The state calls Ryan Kelly.
Ryan Kelly, K-E-L-L-Y.
Your Honor, for the record, we're calling Agent Kelly for limited purposes this morning.
Yes, ma'am.
Agent Kelly, could you please tell the jurors where you work?
I'm a special agent with the South Carolina Law Enforcement Division, SLED.
And what is your position at SLED?
I'm a senior special agent.
And in your position as a senior special agent, were you involved in the investigation into the deaths of Paul and Maggie Murdaugh?
Yes, ma'am, I was.
I'm going to ask you to take a look at some exhibits here. State's Exhibit 464.
Yes, ma'am.
Could you tell us what that is?
These are the buccal swabs of Philip Beach, Renee Beach, Robin Beach, and John Murdaugh.
And States 465.
These are the buccal swabs of Ronald Freeman. Let's see.
466.
The buccal swab of Michael List.
467.
The buccal swab of Matthew Luce.
And 468.
It's a buccal swab, I'm trying to see. It's a buccal swab of Curtis Smith.
And Agent Kelly, who collected those buccal swabs?
I did.
Okay, and how did you collect them?
We have a process where we put on rubber gloves, and we have Q-tips that are sealed. We break the packaging, unseal the Q-tip. We insert one Q-tip into the side of their cheek, and we obtain a buccal swab sample. We then remove the Q-tip, seal it in an envelope, seal the envelope. We then take the second Q-tip, which is in the packet. We break the seal, insert it into the other cheek where we swab. That Q-tip is then secured into a sealed envelope, and then the two separate sealed envelopes are then placed into a third envelope where it's sealed and signed an initial on the seal.
And you did that with each of these buccal swabs?
Yes, ma'am, I did.
Your Honor, at this time, the state would move to admit state's exhibits 464, 465, 466, 467, and 468.
They are admitted.
Thank you, Your Honor. We have no further questions for Senior Special Agent Kelly at this time.
Cross-examination.
No questions.
All right, thank you, sir.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Your next witness.
Rachel Wynn.
Do you affirm the testimony about the judge supporting this trial shall be the truth to help you die?
I do.
And you can
just
give me the sustain.
You can adjust the mic if you have to. State your name again, please, for the record.
Spell your last name.
Rachel Wynn, N-G-U-Y-E-N.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Agent Wynn, could you please tell the jurors who you work for?
I work for the South Carolina Law Enforcement Division, most commonly known as SLED.
And how long have you worked at SLED?
I've worked at SLED for approximately 8.5 years.
Could you pull the microphone a little closer so we can make sure to hear you or speak up a little? Thank you. And what is your position at SLED?
I am a forensic scientist within the DNA Casework Department at the SLED Forensics Laboratory.
So what does that mean? Tell us a little bit more about your job.
Like my job duties?
Yes.
So I am responsible for direct DNA analysis when requested by a DNA analyst. What that is the beginning portion of the laboratory section component of DNA analysis. That involves DNA extraction as well as DNA quantitation. Extraction meaning to separate any possible DNA from a sample, such as a swab or a cutting. And quantitation would be to see how much, if any, is present in a sample. I'm also responsible for serology analysis as well as evidence processing. Serology analysis is body fluid identification. At SLED, we test for blood, semen, and saliva. Evidence processing would be to process items for possible touch DNA or ownership DNA. Touch DNA would be to retrieve any possible DNA on an item from handling it. Ownership DNA would be potentially retrieving any DNA from wearing an article of clothing. In addition to those types of analysis, I also issue reports on my findings when appropriate. I am able to technically and administratively review reports by other serologists, and then I provide courtroom testimony when required.
Now, you must have some kind of special training and education to be able to do these things. Can you tell us about that?
So I have 2 Bachelors of Science degrees from the University of New Haven, one in Forensic Science and one in Biology. Upon being employed within the DNA Casework Department, I underwent approximately a year-long training program under a court-qualified forensic serologist. During this time, I was able to observe as well as practice the different types of serological analysis as well as evidence processing. I was also taught how to issue reports based on any findings, as well as technically and administratively review any reports issued by other serologists. I also was able to observe courtroom testimony. At the end of my training program, I then underwent a competency testing phase. This phase is to test my knowledge and abilities to perform these types of analysis independently. The competency testing phase was comprised of 4 elements: a written exam, an oral exam, a mock case to perform analysis on, as well as mock courtroom testimony. Once those 4 components were successfully completed, I was then deemed able to perform independent analysis on casework. In addition to my serology and evidence processing training, I also, as I mentioned, am trained in direct DNA analysis. That was also an approximately year-long training program under a court-qualified DNA analyst. During that time, I was able to observe, as well as practice, the different types of protocols that are involved. At the end of that training program, once again, I went through a competency testing phase. It was comprised of the same 4 components, and I successfully completed all 4 components, and therefore am also able to perform independent analysis in the area of direct DNA analysis.
I need you to speak into the mic a little better for my benefit, if not for the jurors' benefit.
Okay.
Okay, so, and Agent Nguyen, have you testified in court before?
I have.
And how many times have you testified in court?
This will be my 19th time.
And have you been qualified as an expert when you've testified in prior proceedings?
I have been qualified as an expert.
As an expert in forensic serology?
Yes, ma'am.
Your Honor, at this time, the state would move to qualify Agent Nguyen as an expert in forensic serology.
No objection, ma'am.
She is admitted as an expert in the field of forensic serology.
Okay, Agent Nguyen, you were working in the serology department back in June of 2021?
I was.
Okay. And did you examine some items from evidence in the investigation of the murders of Paul and Maggie Murdaugh?
I did.
I'm going to show you State's Exhibit 63 through 66. I'll have you take a look at these items for us. Are those items that you examined?
Yes, they are. I can identify these items because on the small manila envelopes contained within, I have written the unique case number that was assigned to this case at SLED, as well as each of their item numbers, my initials, and the date I opened the packaging.
Okay, and each of those items is a 300 blackout case.
Yes.
Okay, now what did you do with those items?
So when cartridge casings are submitted for touch DNA, which is what these were submitted for, we process them with a soaking method. So each cartridge case is placed within a tube, submerged within a solution, lightly shaken, and then it has to sit with for at least 30 minutes. Once that 30 minutes is up, each individual cartridge case will then be removed from its tube. The solution will be placed with poured into a filtration unit. The cartridge case will be dried. It will be labeled with the individual item number and then placed on a rack to further dry thoroughly. The solution that is placed within this filtration unit, the filtration unit looks like an hourglass. So there's a chamber on the top and a chamber on the bottom, and it's separated by a filter. So the liquid that is being poured in the top chamber will filter through the center, which has a filter which we call an MVAC collection. The goal is that if there's any DNA present within these cartridge casings, it will be trapped within the filter. And then the water goes to the bottom. The solution. And then the filter is set out to dry for at least 24 hours. Once the filter is dried, it is then prepared for analysis. So it is cut in half, placed in a tube, labeled with the case number, the item number, and then it is forwarded for further analysis. The And that collection from these items was identified as SLED item 7.1.
State Exhibit 459, you could tell us, is that what you collected from those cases there?
Yes, so within here is, as I mentioned, SLED item 7.1. Once again, I recognize this because it has the unique case number, the container number, my name and date on the outside, as well as my name and date on a seal at the top.
And what did you say you did when you collected disc, would you say?
So once the MVAC collection or the filter is dried, I will cut it in half and then half again. So each water will be placed within a tube for DNA analysis. It's labeled with the unique case number, the item number, and it is forwarded for further analysis.
So you forwarded that to DNA for more analysis?
That is correct.
Your Honor, at this time, the state would move 459 into evidence.
Admit it.
All right. I'm going to show you states 33 and 34, which are fired shot shells. Did you perform any kind of testing on those two items?
Yes, so states 33 and states 34 are consistent with SLED item number 9 and 10, which were fired shot shells. These were also submitted to the laboratory for touch processing. These shot shells were swabbed for the touch collection. So basically, I take two swabs, sterile swabs, and moisten one with deionized water, and then I will rub it against the exterior of both of them and then leave them out to dry. Once the swabs are dried, I will then prepare them for DNA analysis, which involves just cutting a small portion from each swab, placing it within a tube, labeling it with the case number, the item number, and forwarding it for further analysis. For this, these swabs from the entire exterior of these two items were identified as item 10.1.
And I believe item 10.1 is also in State's Exhibit 459, which has been admitted. And you can open that if you need to.
Yes, this also contains item 10.1.
Okay. Which are the swabs from these shot shells here?
That is correct.
Okay. And then what did you do with those swabs once they were collected?
So they were prepared for DNA analysis and forwarded to the DNA section for further analysis.
Hand you what's been marked as case exhibit 18, which I believe is your item 17.
Yes, so I recognize this from the same process. I have the unique case number, the item number, my initials, and the date I opened. Item 17, which is State's Exhibit 18. I also have my initials and date from when I sealed this pouch.
And now what is that item?
SLED's item 17 are swabs collected from exterior doorknob of storage room door.
And what did you do with that item?
So I prepared these swabs for DNA analysis. Once again, I just cut a small portion from the swabs and forwarded it for further analysis.
States 259.
States 259, I do recognize for the same reason. I have the case number, the item numbers, my initials, and the date that I opened these items. Found within States 259 are items 15 and 16. Item 15 are swabs from Camo Benelli 12-gauge shotgun receiver forward of the loading port. And swabs identified as item 16 are swabs collected from barrel of Camo Benelli 12-gauge shotgun.
Now, did you do any testing of those swabs?
Yes. Items 15 and 16 had blood requests on them. So these were tested with our presumptive blood test. A presumptive test only indicates the possible presence of a body fluid. And how I did that is because since these are swabs, I took a sera swab, moistened it with deionized water, then rubbed it gently upon the swabs that are identified as these items. I then tested that test swab for the possible presence of blood. Closer.
This is a personal conversation.
I'm sorry.
You know, the prosecutor is behind you, and you're looking at her, and Mike is in front of you, and Attorney General, if you would move in a different direction, the witness will speak in a different direction, and I can understand what she's saying, or she can speak louder, or speak into the mic rather than speaking to you.
Yes, sir, so if you could please continue explaining what the item is, please.
Yes, so I tested these presumptively for the presence of blood. So item 15, which were the swabs from the receiver forward of the loading port of the Camo Benelli 12-gauge shotgun, tested positive for the possible presence of blood. Item 16, swabs collected from barrel of Camo Benelli 12-gauge shotgun, tested negative for the possible presence of blood. Both sets of swabs were forwarded to the DNA section for further analysis.
Okay, so at this point, we don't know. We just know there's blood.
There's the possible presence of blood on item 15.
Objecting to the leading question.
Pardon?
Objecting to the leading question.
All right. Please do not lead the witness and restate the question.
And what did you say was present or presumptively present on those items?
So item 15 was positive for the possible presence of blood. Item 16 was negative for the possible presence of blood.
And what did you do after you made those determinations?
So both of these sets of swabs were prepared for DNA analysis and forwarded to the DNA section for further testing.
I'm going to hand you State's Exhibit 398. If you will take a look at those two items and tell the jury what those are.
State's Exhibit 398 are SLED items 22.4 and 22.5. which corresponds to item 22.5 is described as reddish brown debris swabbed from the right side of item 22 receiver, and 22.5 is described as reddish brown debris swabbed from the left side of the item 22 receiver above manufacturer information.
And what did you do with those items?
These items also had a blood request. So the same process as the previous items I just mentioned, I took a sterile swab, moistened it with deionized water, swabbed these swabs, and then with that test swab is what I tested for the presumptive blood test.
Could you please explain any results?
So both items 22.4 and 22.5 tested positive for the possible presence of blood.
And then what did you do with those items once you did the blood test?
These two sets of swabs were then prepared for DNA analysis and forwarded to the DNA section for further testing.
Now, there was a number of guns in this case that were processed. Is that right?
I believe so.
Okay. Could you tell us about the testing you did on State's Exhibit 89, your item 30, the Mossberg shotgun?
So when items of evidence are submitted to the SLED laboratory, sometimes they have multiple requests of different departments. In this case, item 30, a Mossberg shotgun, had three requests for the latent prints department, for the DNA department, as well as the firearms department. So we try to organize it so that no department's analysis conflicts with another department. In this case, this item was forwarded or was sent to the latent prints department for processing. The latent prints examiners are trained in collection for touch DNA as well as swabbing up any stains that they may notice. So item 30 had a blood request on it. The latent prints examiner, which took this item into their custody, requested that I come down as a second pair of eyes to visually examine this item for any possible staining. We located one stain, which I tested for the possible presence of blood, and the result was negative.
And after that, are you aware of any further processing on that Mossberg shotgun?
I am not. So I was there with the examiner, and it remained within that examiner's custody the entire time.
All right, let's move on to the other shotguns. We have a Browning shotgun, a Benelli Black Eagle II 12-gauge shotgun, and the rifle, in addition to the guns we've already talked about. Can you kind of sum up how you analyze those three different guns?
So those three different guns that you just mentioned were items 31, 32, and 33. They were done in the same manner as item 30, as I just mentioned. So they were within the custody of the latent prints examiner. I went down to visualize it for any possible staining. The results for these three guns, however, was no apparent blood stains present.
And did you do anything else to check for blood at that point?
I did nothing further with these items.
I'm going to show you State's Exhibit 83. If you could take a look and tell us what items are contained in Exhibit 83.
May I open this?
Yes.
State's Exhibit 83 contains SLED items 51.
And Agent Wynn, you don't have to go through the SLED item numbers.
Through 60.
Yeah. And those items are what, though?
They are all swabs that were taken from the Chevy Suburban.
Okay. And can you tell us what kind of testing was done on those swabs?
So it appears that these swabs were collected because they were Blue Star positive, which to my understanding is a presumptive test used by the crime scene unit to indicate areas of possible blood staining. Since they were already presumptively tested, I used a confirmatory test to test these swabs for the presence of blood. So SLED items 51 through 55 and 57 through 60 were all negative with that testing, which means there is no human blood identified. Item 56, which was swabs collected from steering wheel, had a positive result, which means blood was identified on this item.
And what kind of testing did you do to confirm that blood?
I used a confirmatory test called Hematrace.
And how does Hematrace work?
So Hematrace is a CARD test. It's similar to a pregnancy test or more relevant, a COVID test. You take a sample from the item of evidence, place it in a solution, and it should sit there for a while. And then once it has mixed in with the solution will then be placed on this CARD test, and then a result will be revealed. Results are read after 10 minutes.
Okay. And what are the potential results from that test? Just in general, from hematrace testing?
There's a positive result or a negative result.
Okay. And in this case, what was the result on the steering wheel swab?
On the steering wheel swab, it was positive, which is a result of blood identified.
Okay. And then what did you do with that swab once you completed your test?
So item 56 was then prepared for DNA analysis and forwarded to the DNA section for further analysis.
Okay, I'm going to next show you items, or state's exhibit, 251 and 252. Those are marked for identification only. Okay, can you tell us what are those items?
So state's exhibit 251 corresponds to the left fingernail clippings and right fingernail clippings of Margaret Murdaugh. State's exhibit 252 corresponds to the left fingernail clippings and right fingernail clippings of Paul Murdaugh.
Okay. So on state's 251, the fingernail clippings from Margaret Murdaugh, what, if anything, did you do to those items?
So state's exhibit 251, what's received is clipping from her fingernails. So I will take a portion of the clippings that have been submitted, place it within a tube, and forward it to the DNA section for further analysis.
Okay, and when you say a portion of the clippings, does that mean you clip some more and send to DNA, or what does that mean?
So the literal fingernail clippings are what's being submitted within the envelope. So say there's 5 clippings. I will forward approximately 2 to 3 of what's been submitted, place it within the tube, and that's what will be forwarded for analysis.
And did you do the same process with State's Exhibit 252, the fingernail clippings from Paul Murdaugh?
Yes, State's Exhibit 252 will receive the same preparation for DNA analysis.
Your Honor, at this time the State would move Exhibits 251 and 252 into evidence.
No objection.
They're admitted.
All right, Agent Wynn, next if you could tell us a little about State's Exhibit 418, which was Alec Murdaugh's shirt. Could you describe how you first processed the shirt when it was initially received by the lab?
So the white shirt from Richard Murdaugh was submitted with a blood request on June 9th of 2021, I processed this item for the possible presence of blood. So that entails I first visually examined the shirt for any areas that are consistent with the staining of blood. Then I tested these items that I have indicated with our phenolphthalein presumptive test for blood. Two stains were indicated or were tested. Both stains were positive for the possible presence of blood. One stain located at the exterior front bottom edge of white shirt was forwarded to the DNA section for further analysis. Afterward, okay.
And I'm going to hand you States 460. Now, you just said that that stain was processed and sent to DNA. How did you process that? Did you send the whole shirt, or how did that work?
So the stain that I had located, I cut that stain from the shirt. I then prepared it for DNA analysis, which means I cut a small portion of that stain, placed it within the tube, labeled that tube, and forwarded the cutting as well as the portion that I have prepared to the DNA section for further analysis.
And that cutting is contained in States 460, is that correct?
That cutting is contained in States 460.
And what date did you perform that initial analysis?
On June 9th of 2021.
And I think you mentioned there was another stain also located on the shirt at that time?
Yes, two stains were presumptively tested.
Was that second stain cut on June the 8th?
It was not. It remained in the shirt and was identified with the presumptive test result.
Now, due to ongoing investigation, did you come back and examine that shirt again?
Yes, so afterwards, a request was relayed to me to go back to the shirt and retrieve that stain and forward it for DNA analysis.
Did you do any other testing this second time around?
So when I went to remove that second stain, I met with members of the crime scene unit, Lieutenant Wallace, as well as Special Agent Worley, and they processed the shirt with their LCV testing, which to my understanding is their presumptive test for blood.
And what was discovered during the LCV testing?
So after removing the second stain from the June 9th date that I processed it, 10 additional stains were identified from the LCV processing, which were cut from the shirt and prepared for DNA analysis and forwarded for further testing.
And I will show you states 461. Are those the additional cuttings from the shirt? Here.
Mm-hmm. Yes, so all the cuttings from the shirt are here.
Okay. Now, as far as you're concerned, did you process the shirt any further?
No, besides preparing these additional stains that were identified, nothing further was done.
And what did you do with those cuttings?
I cut a small portion from each of the stains that was indicated as being positive and forwarded it to the DNA section for further analysis.
All right, and State's Exhibit 418 is the defendant's shorts. How were those shorts processed in comparison to the shirt?
So the shorts also were submitted with a blood request. They were processed in a similar manner. Several stains were tested, however, two were positive for the possible presence of blood. A stain located at the front left interior pocket of the pair of green shorts was forwarded for further analysis. This was processed on the same June 9th date of 2021. The shorts were also additionally processed at the same time the shirt was additionally processed to retrieve a second stain that was indicated as the possible presence of blood. And then the same members of the crime scene unit also processed the shirt with their LCV testing.
And I believe we still have Exhibit 460 up there. Does that contain the first cutting from the pair of pants on June 8th?
Yes, State's Exhibit 460 contains the first cutting from the pair of shorts from June 8th, or 9th, I'm sorry.
And then State's Exhibit 461, what cutting, that contains cutting from the pants on July 21st, is that right?
Yes, so State's Exhibit 461 does contain the additional cuttings, so the second stain that had tested positive on the June 9th processing date, as well as six additional stains were indicated from the crime scene unit when they processed the pair of shorts with their LCV testing.
And then what did you do with those cuttings once you took them?
The cuttings for the shorts were prepared for DNA analysis. Once again, cutting a small portion of the stain and forwarding it for further analysis.
And I'm going to show you States 473. You can take a look at that. Do you recognize that as, what do you recognize that as?
So this appears to be a photo of item 20.2, which is the cutting from front left interior pocket of pair of green shorts from Richard Murdoch.
Your Honor, at this time I would move States 473 into evidence.
No objection.
It's admitted.
Mr. McPublish?
Yes.
Okay, and Agent Nguyen, if you could describe to the jurors what they're looking at in that picture.
So this is the stain that was tested, and as you can see, I have labeled it with the SLED item number, both on the physical item, as well as it's contained within a manila envelope, which has the unique case number, item number, the request was for blood, the location it was taken from, as well as that it's a cutting. In addition, you can see my initials and date from when I prepared this for DNA analysis.
Okay, and again, sorry, what were the presumptive results of the testing for blood?
So the presumptive results for this stain were that it was positive for the possible presence of blood.
And we talked a little bit about the cuttings of the shirt and the shorts. Just to kind of aid the jury in seeing what you actually did, I'm going to show you tapes 471 and 472. Do you recognize those pictures?
I do recognize these pictures. They are from the additional processing that occurred on the shirt.
Your Honor, at this time, this tape would move 471 and 472 into evidence.
No objection.
They are admitted.
On tapes 472, could you just kind of describe to the jurors what they're looking at here and point their attention to the areas in the shirt that you cut, if you can see?
So if you look in the square labeled E7, there is a stain that's circled. It has the item number 19.3 as well as a plus fien. That was the second stain that I had tested on the original processing date that was to be retrieved during this time of processing. Then you can see there are additional stains circled in blue with letter identifiers. Those were areas of staining that was identified from the crime scene unit when they processed with their LCV test. Each stain has the sub-item twice. That is to, one is to stay with the stain once I've cut it, and then one is to stay within the shirt, so in the event that you needed to know where that stain had originated, you could locate it.
And then states exhibit 471.
State's exhibit 471 is the front of the shirt. It has several areas of staining that were circled as a result of the LCV processing by the crime scene unit.
And those are also areas that you cut from the shirt.
Yes, so once again, I have written the sub-item numbers that they were assigned and then removed each of these stainings along the line that I've outlined and prepared these stains for further analysis for DNA.
And you said you followed the same process regarding the pants.
That is correct.
All right, let's move on to State Exhibit 419, which was the shoes of the defendant.
So the shoes, which are described as a pair of red, yellow, and white tennis shoes from Richard Murdaugh, they had the same blood request, so I visually examined the shoes for any areas of possible blood staining and then tested those stainings. Two were indicated as being possibly positive for the possible presence of blood. One stain was forwarded for DNA analysis, and it was located on the left shoelace of the pair of red, yellow, and white tennis shoes.
And are those cuttings in State's Exhibit 460 that you already have up there with you?
Yes, the cutting from the shoes is contained within State's Exhibit 460.
Your Honor, at this time the state removes tapes 460 and 461 into evidence.
No objection.
You're admitted.
All right, Agent Nguyen, we're making some good progress here. State's Exhibit 226 was a blue raincoat. Can you explain to the jurors what you did to process that item?
So the blue raincoat also had two types of processing. During the first time of processing, which occurred on October 7th of 2021, the raincoat was processed for the possible presence of blood. This was done by myself, as well as members of the crime scene unit, Lieutenant Wallace, as well as Special Agent Moore. I first performed presumptive testing with our blood tests, and then the crime scene unit went behind and then processed with the raincoat with their LCB testing. I tested 71 stains. All 71 stains were negative for the possible presence of blood. After that, the LCV processing took place. No areas of interest were indicated as interpreted by the crime scene unit as being positive, and therefore, on October 7th of 2021, nothing was forwarded for DNA analysis.
And why was nothing forwarded, just simply?
There were no stains that indicated the possible presence of blood.
All right. Then did you go back and re-examine the raincoat?
Yes. An additional request came in for the raincoat for ownership. Once again, ownership is a collection method for DNA to identify the primary wearer of an item.
Okay. And how did you process that for ownership?
Two sets of swabs were taken off the raincoat. The first set of swabs was identified as item 173.2. which were swabs from interior cuffs, collar, and hood, interior and exterior zipper area, zipper and zipper pull of the blue raincoat. The second set of swabs that were taken from the raincoat were identified as item 173.3, swabs from side openings, zipper area, and both interior portions of exterior pocket of the blue raincoat.
I'll hand you States 462. What are those? Are those the swabs you were just telling us about?
State's Exhibit 462 are both sets of swabs that I just recently spoke about from collecting from the raincoat.
Okay. And what did you do with those swabs?
These swabs were prepared for DNA analysis and forwarded to the DNA section for further analysis.
This time the state would move to admit State's Exhibit 462.
No objection.
It's admitted.
And Agent Nguyen, when you were examining the raincoat for ownership, did you find anything on that raincoat to help with that analysis, such as hair or anything like that?
So part of the ownership processing is to look for hair. The raincoat, there was no hair found.
Did you also notice anything about the condition of the raincoat?
Yes, so on my evidence worksheet, which is where we document the items that we perform processing on, as well as the respective results, I also document any describing factors. So on this worksheet, in regards to the blue raincoat, I do have that the plastic seam liner was coming off throughout the item.
That the, what did you say?
I called it a plastic seam liner.
Was coming off? I can't hear you.
Coming off throughout the item.
Also, in this case, did you receive a number of buccal swabs?
I did.
And that is, what did you do with those buccal swabs when you received them?
So buccal swabs don't require any testing on my part. I just prepare those buccal swabs for DNA analysis. Once again, cutting a small portion off of each swab, placing it within a tube, and forwarding it for further analysis.
All right, Agent Nguyen, the state has no further questions at this time. If you'll please answer any questions from the defense.
Mr. Barber.
Good morning, excuse me. Good morning, Agent Nguyen.
Good morning.
Is it Agent, am I right? Very briefly,
At the outset, you discussed collecting for DNA testing for the blackout cartridges. Is that correct?
Collecting for the possible presence of touch DNA, yes.
Yes. And did you only test two of those cartridges?
All seven were processed using the soaking method.
Okay. With that processing method, any results that you would receive, would they be specific to any one cartridge, or would it just be for the collection of all seven?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
Would you have results for DNA from the way that you collected the sample for a specific shell case, or would it be for all seven as a set?
Okay, I just want to clarify. I did say there are seven cartridges. There are only six. So although they are being individually soaked, they are being combined within that filtration unit, so the results would be from all of the cartridges together.
Okay. And you had positive presumptive tests for two shotguns, correct? Portions of two shotguns?
Do you have a item number that corresponds?
I can get those in a second. Do you remember there are two shotguns you just testified had positive presumptive blood tests? One was sled item number 15.
Yes, so the swabs from the Benelli shotgun, item 15, was positive for the possible presence of blood. However, I believe you mean the second set of swabs, item 16, that was negative.
And then there was later a sled item 22.
Oh, yes. The two sets of swabs from sled item 22 were both positive for the possible presence of blood.
So I guess, what exactly is a presumptive test?
So a presumptive test is indicating the possible presence of a body fluid, in this case, blood. It's not confirming the presence. It's just an indication so that we can further test that stain.
And how does it indicate the possible presence of blood?
So the phenolphthalein test interacts with the hemoglobin found within blood, and that's what it's basically giving a positive result with.
Is it fair to say that it changes color? It's like a dye and it changes color?
So it's a color change test. Based on the presence of the hemoglobin, a swab that's being tested will turn a bright pink color.
And is that presumptive test specific to human blood?
It is not specifically human blood. It can be human blood or animal blood.
Could chemicals other than blood cause a positive test result?
So the phenolphthalein test has what we call false positives, which can give a positive result, but it is not blood. Those include copper salts, nickel salts, rust, as well as some plant and peroxidases, which include broccoli, cauliflower, horseradish. It also can give a positive result for pus, and sometimes in the presence of bacteria.
Okay, so there are a number of things that could give a positive result. Is that why you also have a confirmatory test?
If we test something for the possible presence of blood, we don't typically do a confirmatory test unless it's requested. We just store that sample for DNA analysis.
Okay. Who would request a confirmatory test?
Usually an investigator of an agency may request it. Sometimes solicitors or defense attorneys may request an additional test.
And the confirmatory test, I think you testified, is just basically like a COVID test?
It works similar to a COVID test.
Two lines means human blood?
It'll have a line to indicate that the test is working properly, which is a control line. And then if it is positive, it will have an additional second line. If that second line does not show, that means that the test is negative.
Is it an accurate test?
I would say that it's an accurate test as long as the control line is present.
It's more accurate than the presumptive test. That's why you use it, correct?
So the confirmatory test is saying that, yes, blood is identified on the item that's being tested.
Human blood?
Human blood, as well as higher primate blood and ferret blood.
And you did not do any confirmatory tests on the shotguns?
I did not do any confirmatory tests on the shotgun swabs.
And that was simply because no one asked you to, correct?
In effort to not consume any of the sample on the swabs, as a swab is a small area, we just forward it for DNA analysis.
But in the Chevy Suburban, you did perform a hematrace test?
Yes. Because that these swabs for the Chevy Suburban were already previously processed with another presumptive test by the crime scene unit, we could not presumptive test behind because our two tests work in a similar manner.
Whose decision was it to do the hematrace test on the Chevy Suburban?
That is typically how we process items of evidence that we receive from the crime scene unit in the form of swabs based on any of their presumptive testing.
But like, who made the decision to do the hematrace test on that steering wheel? A name of a person.
I performed the hematrace test.
On your own initiative?
No, that is a common way we do testing on swabs that have already been collected based on a presumptive test.
Did someone instruct you to perform a hematrace test on the steering wheel?
No, it is part of our general operating procedures.
But you did not perform hematrace tests on the weapons?
The swabs that were collected off of the weapons, no, because they were not presumptively testing prior, so I could use our presumptive test on those items.
Did you perform or prepare any samples from the victims' clothing or bodies other than the fingernail clippings that you discussed?
I do not believe so.
Okay, so the only thing from the body of Maggie Murdoch or Paul Murdoch that you tested were the fingernail clippings from Maggie Murdoch?
So I prepared the fingernail clippings for DNA analysis as well as the buccal swabs from those individuals.
Right, but nothing else from their bodies, correct?
No, I did not test their clothing.
Or their clothing, sorry.
I did not test their clothing.
When looking at the T-shirt that you just testified about, and those cuttings, I think you have opened a bag and the cuttings were there and you prepared them. Did you perform any serology tests on those cuttings?
No, I just removed those cuttings from the shirt as the result of the crime scene testing.
Are you aware of any serology tests being performed on those cuttings?
Of the shirt?
Yes, of those big shirt cuttings.
I believe there was further analysis performed on those cuttings.
Did somebody other than you later perform serology tests on those cuttings, to your knowledge?
It is my understanding that there was additional testing on those cuttings.
Serology testing?
Serology testing.
Specifically hematrace?
I believe there was hematrace performed on the cuttings from the shirt.
But that, just to be clear, that wasn't performed by you?
I did not perform hematrace on any of the cuttings on the shirt.
Did you perform any hematrace tests on the shorts or tennis shoes?
I did not perform any hematrace testing on the shorts or the shoes.
Just, I guess, maybe a little bit of background to understand maybe who does what. When you're working on this case, do you have like a direct supervisor?
I do have a direct supervisor.
And who is that person?
Her name is Laura Hash.
And is she the person who directs your activities as regard to this case?
Objection, Your Honor. Relevance.
Objection is overruled.
I'm sorry, what was the question?
Is Lieutenant Laura Hash the person who would direct your activities with regards to this case?
So based on our operating manual, as well as my training experience, based on the requests of certain items that are submitted, I will decide how those are tested. However, if additional processing is requested, those usually are communicated to me through my direct supervisor.
And just for clarity, we've talked a bit about DNA, but you're just preparing samples, and they go to someone else who does the analysis and reports. That's not you, correct?
That's correct. I am just preparing the samples for further analysis.
Is the only hemotrace test that you did for this case the steering wheel? Well, strike that. The Chevy Suburban, I believe there may have been some negative tests from the Suburban, but were those the only hemotrace tests you did for this case?
No, I did hemotrace the swabs from the Chevy Suburban. Mm-hmm. I also hemotrace tested swabs collected from a Ford F-250.
And what were the results of from the Ford F-250?
There were four swabs submitted from the Ford F-250, and the results for all four of those sets of swabs were negative for human blood.
So the steering wheel was the only positive test that you did for hematrace?
Yes, the steering wheel from the Chevy Suburban is the only positive hematrace result I have.
If the court's indulgent. Just one final question or a little set of questions. It seems like sometimes the crime scene people or department, I shouldn't just say people, but I guess they're a department, do presumptive blood tests. Is that correct?
Yes, it's my understanding that the crime scene unit does perform presumptive blood tests.
And the initials LCV have been used. I think you might have mentioned. What does that mean?
It stands for leukocrystalline violet.
And can you describe that test?
I don't know much about the test. I just know that it is a test that the crime scene unit uses as their presumptive blood test.
Do you know what color it turns when there's a positive result?
It'll turn a purple color.
Let me ask this. Why? We saw a picture of the shirt gritted out. You remember that exhibit?
I do.
Why was the presumptive test done? Was at the SLAB laboratory? Is that the location that was?
Are you asking about the LCV processing?
Yes. Where was that test conducted?
That was done at the SLAB laboratory.
Why was that done by the crime scene unit and not the serology unit?
We do not use LCV testing, and I am unsure as to why that particular test was chosen to be used by the crime scene unit.
Because earlier, you did tests on the hem, right? The pheno tests on the front and back hem of the shirt, is that correct?
I did.
But then the crime scene unit later came back and in the lab did a different kind of test.
That is correct.
And you don't know why?
I was not part of that decision. I was just notified that they would be performing that test while I was retrieving the additional stain that I had tested earlier.
And finally, it seems like if something is tested presumptive in the field and comes to you, you do a confirmatory test. Is that what happened with the Chevy Suburban?
Yes, that's correct.
But if something comes to you and there's not been a presumptive test, like with the shotguns, then you don't perform a confirmatory test?
No, I do the presumptive test.
Do you know why that's the policy?
It's an effort to not consume as much sample on a swab. A swab is a sterile Q-tip, so essentially the surface area is very small. So in efforts to not consume the sample and to give more for DNA analysis, that's what's done.
If something goes to DNA analysis and there's some result, does it ever come back for a blood test to see if the source of the DNA was blood?
To be pheno tested?
No, for hematrace test.
As I mentioned, hematrace testing can be requested on the back end, as any of our CAR tests can be.
In your experience, I think we had some testimony about your experience. If DNA is found on something, is there ever then a time that you go back and say, hey, was the source of this DNA blood and do a hematrace test?
Hematrace specifically, to my knowledge, no. But in my experience, there have been times that solicitors or defense attorneys will request a CAR test be done on a sample after the DNA analysis has been performed.
No further questions.
Any redirect?
None from the state, Your Honor.
Thank you. You may step down.
That wraps up segment number one in our continuing coverage of the trial of Alec Murtaugh. There is much more to come. Press subscribe so you don't miss any breaking updates and discussions on the case as we have it for you. I'm Tony Bruschi. Stay with us.
Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free to play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino.
COTA just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your COTA fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with COTA. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com, RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com, RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring. Right here, right
now. Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. Social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com, RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.